Okay, on the top of Kuf Chaf Dalet Amud Aleph, yesterday the Gemara had asked, who is the author of the position in the what we had brought before, the Brice, or the that we had brought before from Bechoros, that when it comes to Shevach Mela, that the Bechor is no Tel Pishnayim, because he's considered Mokzak and not Ra'oi. So we said that that is authored by Rebbe, because we have a Brice. So this is the Brice of the Tanya. Ain a bechor notel pishnayim b'shevach sheshibchu nichasim nachar mitat aviem. That the basic statement that there's a cutoff line. What's considered mechuzak at the death of their father? That's the cutoff of the estate. Any increase in value from that point forward is considered ra'oi, and the bechor will not take any portion of it. Rebbe Omer, well, let's differentiate. Omer ani bechor notel pishnayim b'shevach sheshibchu nichasim nachar mitat aviem. If it happens, memela, meaning that if passively the value has increased or some there is some sort of addition to the value of the estate, then the bechor is entitled to that. On the other hand, if there's active increase in value, that was what Tzvi pointed out yesterday, for instance, in the what we brought from the Tosefta about the building of the houses, something where the Yitomim invest in the property, then that's not classified as being part of the estate of Mukhzak, and Bechor will not get Pishnayim. Then, and then I think it's not related to the original right Yusha. Yashu Shtar Chov. So now here, this is if they inherit a Shtar Chov, Bechor notel Pishnayim. So this part of the right verse that we're quoting over here is actually only according to Rebbe, which we're going to see today. An extension of the Brisa, so we'll see that this really is only the opinion of Rebbe. But if they inherit a shtar chov that their father had outstanding against someone else, then the bechor is notel pishnayim. Now, it's only a shtar because we are classifying a shtar as being kigavot dami. Since you have the shtar, it's kigavoy dami. And therefore, it's considered to be mukhzak already, which we'll discuss more today. If mukhzak in the shtar, then that is entitles the bechor to pishnayim over here. That it's assumed that the shtar is going to be paid, or it's a kigavui dami, or it's a mashkon already, which you're entitled to take pishnayim in. Whatever, however the shtar functions, right, it allows you to take pishnayim according to Rebbe. On the other hand, if it's an oral loan, that will not be true. You'll be missing because of under basic premises, which is that even if you lend with edim, a person can deny the loan and just say peratif, that I paid it back, because we've had this principle come up a number of times, that a filo, someone who lends with edim, is not required to repay with edim, and therefore it will not be classified kigavui dami or mukzak, and even Rebbe would agree, if it's just an oral loan, that the bechor does not get pishtayim. So we're talking specifically about a loan that is bishtar chov, and it's classified as kigavui dami. Now, the next statement in the Brisa, Yatzaliyam Shtar Chov, if the Shtar Chov comes out against them, then Bechor Notein Pishtayim, he has to pay in two times. I mean, just like if the estate is responsible, right, I mean, if the estate's responsible for the loan, then he's going to, by definition, have two times the contribution of anybody else, because he's getting twice the portion. So if you take a fixed amount from the estate, then his percentage of that is two times anybody else's percentage, because he owns two times more than anybody else. Now this will be true both according to Rebbe and according to the Chachamim. This is not a statement that's unique to Rebbe, it's unique to the Chachamim. The Chachamim would agree to this as well. It's a divrei hakol. The only question then is the next line of the Braisa is how to explain this. V'im omer amar, eni notein v'eni notel, rashai. If he wants to deny his right to the Bechorav, he thinks there's an advantage, right? If you want, for instance, in example in football, if he wants to deny the penalty, he has more advantage by not taking the Bechor over here, then he has a right to just deny taking the Bechor. Now, can he do that with the Chelek HaPashut, or is that only with the Chelek HaBechorav? This comes back to something we've discussed in the past, which is that a person can not disown, right, or disengage from anything they own without taking something, without being mafkirit, without doing specific action or kinyan to remove it from their property. But that's only items that you own. On the other hand, items that are supposed to come to your possession, If they are supposed to come to your possession, you are able to, just through Amira, say, I'm not interested, and you never take possession of them. That's because the underlying assumption in these situations is that it's a matana, it's a gift, or it's a zchut to you, and therefore we assign it to you because it's a zchut. If you say, no thanks, it's not a zchut to me, then you never ever take possession of it. So Tosfos points to that here, and the Rishbam as well says it, that this is only true of the chelek b'chora. The chelek b'chora is some sort of matana, some sort of additional right that is given to the b'chor. So the b'chor can say, no thank you, about his chelek b'chora, because it never came into his possession unless he's willing to accept it. If he accepts it already, then he can't get rid of it either, unless he specifically makes a kinyan or a hefker to take it out of his possession. But before it gets to his possession, he can say, no thank you. On the other hand, once it's in his possession, and that's what we call the chelek ha-pshuta, the chelek ha-pshuta is true of him and all the other brothers, is Yerusha min ha-Torah, and the Yerusha min ha-Torah, it's in your possession, whether you like it or not, it comes into your possession. So therefore, you already own it. You are an owner, whether you like it or not. So you cannot get rid of the chelek ha-pshuta. So the only thing, a chelek ha-pshut, the only thing the b'chor can do is stop the chelek b'chora, but he cannot stop the chelek ha-pshut. The second question is, when is this ever relevant? Why would the b'chor, even if he pays a higher percentage out of the estate towards any loan, why would he ever want to deny, right, getting the chelek b'chora? So say 20% of the estate's been taken away. So every person who has a contribution or has a piece of it will lose 20% of their chelek. He'll lose, right, 20% of one chelek and 20% of the other chelek, right? So, but on a percentage basis, he still gets more by keeping his chelek b'chora than he does by denying it. It seems strange. Why would he ever want to deny the chelek b'chora? He loses the same percentage. It's twice as much on a physical basis of what everybody else, but on a percentage basis, he's losing the same amount than anybody else, and he ends up with more by keeping his chelek b'chora. So here, the Rishonim are trying to discuss, what's this case where the b'chor will want to do this? Where's the case that he want to do it? So if you look at Tosfos, says right off the bat, it says, Omari, the nafka minim yitomim ketanim. It's a case where the yitomim are ketanim. The yechol omar ha-b'chor, eni notel pishnaim, v'yishaer ha-karka lifnei ha-yitomim. So the b'chor, it sounds like here, the b'chor is not, you know, I mean, he's a yatom, but he's not a katan. And if he leaves the, if he denies the chelek ha-b'chora, that stays with the yitomim, it's classified as part of the yitomim. Because then we don't go and deal with the nechasim yotomim. So basically what he's doing is protecting the property from the creditor. Right? He can go ahead and protect the property from the creditor by leaving it by the yotomim. Or we don't bother. So he has some incentive here to leave with the yotomim, even though he will get less out of it. The problem is that the other way around, he'll lose all of it. Right? Because the creditor will come and take the property because he's allowed to engage with him. So here, if he keeps the property all under this, I would call it curtain or...
So
he's protected, it will stay within the family, and it won't be lost to the creditor. So there's a value in keeping it within the family. That's the explanation of the Re. You know, later down in the Tosfos, it says there's a Rabbeinu Tam, who says, "Demar sheyotza lav shtarchov ala b'chor atzmo, v'lo alachim." What happens if there's a shtarchov against the b'chor himself, but not against the rest of the brothers? So again, he would rather not get the property. If he gets the property, then the Baal Chov has something to go after him for now. The Baal Chov has something to collect from, because now he has property, and he's a lien on all his properties. So what does he do? He says, no thank you. When he says no thank you, it stays with his brothers. It stays with his brothers. The Baal Chov has no right to go after his brothers. The Baal Chov, or the Shtar, is only on him. So the reason he wants to leave it with his brothers is because...
There's one the Baal Chov.
Right, the Baal Chov can't get it then. It's not him, it's his brothers. So that's the other explanation of the Tosfos. So you have the Re and the Rabbeinu Tam, and then the Rishbam has another case, which is the Rishbam is a play almost on the other cases of the Tosfos, but he says, Nafkamina shetzarek zeh malveh litvoa techav shel zeh ledin. That in a case where you want to take from the estate, you have to bring all the litigants to court. The litigants in the court are every one of the brothers. It's not just the Bechor, but all the brothers over here. If he can't get all the brothers to court in one shot, the Baal Chov will lose. Or they're out of the country. Beis Din will not deal with this Baal Chov until all the litigants or all the parties are involved. They're not going to bring the case 2-3 times. So in a case where the possession of the Bechor, or the entire possession of the Bechor would pay off the loan, then the Baal Chov says, listen, I don't have to deal with anyone, so I just get it from you, and I have everything I need. But in the case where his Chov exceeds that of the Bechor, then he has to deal with the other brothers. So how does he make it that exceeds the Baal Chov? How does it exceed the Bechor? The Bechor denies his, right, his part in the Bechor. Now he has to go after the estate. He can't just go after the Bechor. If he can't just go after the Bechor, then the brothers are involved, and he has an advantage, because either the brothers won't come to court, brothers aren't around, and therefore the Baal Chov, or the creditor, doesn't have a way to get the money out, and he'll be protected. So this is the Rashbam's explanation, somewhat, right, similar, a little bit like the Rabbeinu Tam, this idea that it's focused on the Bechor, because the brothers are not cooperating, or they're not here, and therefore the Bechor wants it to spread out across all the brothers, not just on him. Alright, so these are all, the different cases or unique scenarios where the Bechor would have a value in denying his Bechorah rather than keeping it and just losing that same percentage or a larger amount, but the same percentage of that total amount. So now, says, my time, my Rabbanan. What's the opinion of the Rabbanan here? The Rabbanan here who say the cutoff is the death of the father, and any shevach that is added afterwards is not part of the estate to be classified as mukzak and double for the bechor. Because it says, Amakra, the pasuk says, the bechor, latet lo pishnayim, to give him pishnayim. Matana karya rachmana. The Torah calls it a gift. Ma matana adamachi liyadeh. A gift is not completed until it reaches the recipient's hands. Af chelik bechorah adamachi liyadeh. So too with the chelik bechorah, until it reaches your hands, right, then it is not classified as a belonging to the bechorah, it's classified as mukzak. So the problem faced here, at least according to the chachamim, is that the father can never gift the item to the son. Why can't he give it? It's dovar shelo bali olam. The shevach that comes afterwards is not an item that the father has any ownership over in a sense of being mukzak or being real. So therefore, when he passes away and he passes it to his son, passing it to his son only works with items that exist. Items that don't exist, something that is in the future, he can't pass. And if he can't pass it and the Bechor can't take possession of it, then there's nothing to talk about. It's already considered ra'oi. By definition, it's ra'oi because he's not mukzak. He can't pass it. That's like a matana. That's the way the Chachamim view it. Rebbe Omer, on the other hand, what is Rebbe's position? It says, Amar Kra, Pishnayim. Mekish chelik bichora lechelik pashut. The Torah creates a singular unit called bichora and pashut. His two units together are a single unit. Ma chelik pashut avagav delo matiyatei. We know that it's true by the chelik pashut. If the property goes up in value by itself, somehow it increases in value, you're not going to say that the children are no longer entitled to that value. It's clear that all the children split in it. So, he doesn't have to be the recipient yet. Doesn't mean at the time the father can maybe give him and they can receive it from their father at the death. No. Anything that belongs to the estate will be split evenly. So, anything that belongs to the estate is split evenly, so too the chelik bechorah, which is connected to the chelik pashut. The chelik bechorah is simply two times the chelik pashut. If it's two times the chelik pashut, then if the chelik pashut increases, so does the chelik bechorah in concert, right? Or in relationship to the chelik pashut that's increased, so has the chelik bichorah according to Rebbe. Now, don't both of them have the other half of the pasuk, which is Rabbanan, nami aktiv pishnayim. Chamim have the same problem of the hekesh. So how the mitvilei achad metzra? This is an interesting that the division of the property will not throw, for instance, here, again, our case here, we have five brothers. Five brothers, we said before, you split it into six portions. The Bechor gets two portions, and the other brothers get their each single portion. So now, how do you divide up the portions? We've said earlier that you throw a goral. You have a lottery. So how many portions do you have to throw the goral on? Do you throw the goral on six portions or on five portions? So this is what the Chachamim say. The Kekesh tells you only do it on five, because the Bechor will automatically get the portion that's next to his. We're not going to say to him, throw six goralot, and the Bechor will get one on each side of the property, or he doesn't get it, they don't have to be adjacent. That's not true. The Bechor, once he gets a unit, we're going to ensure that the units are together, that they're not in separate locations. They got to be in a single location. So that's the answer, or what the Chamim used the Hekesh for, is to show you that it's always, the Bechor has to get something that's valuable in the sense that it's adjacent, it's easy to work, and it's one unit next to each other. And so, where does where does Rebbe learn that out from? Right, so the Rebbe, I have to say, learns it out that it's a svara, that Chad Metzra from the Hekesh, he has the Hekesh, he just uses the Hekesh for more than that item. He uses the Hekesh to teach you, yes, he gets it in one place, but he also uses the Hekesh to say you that it's, right, a relative to the Pashut, the Bechorah will increase. I mean, it's the same limud, he just has a more expansive view of that limud of the Hekesh. So then, Rebbe Nami, Aktiv Letetlo, right, Pishnaim, that Letetlo means Derech Matana, what is Rebbe going to do with that? So how Shimamar, any notel, but any notain, Rashai. That's exactly why the Bechorah can be denied by the Bechor. Why? Because it is a Matana. As opposed to the Chelek HaPashut, which is Yerusha. Yerusha comes, whether you like it or not, and you take, with the death of the father, you take possession of it automatically. Right? That is not true, but the Chelek Bechorah is a Matana. It's a gift. If it's a gift, we've described this before, and that is what we described. Why the Bechor can deny such a possession is because a gift you can deny coming into your possession. Just say, I don't want it, and it won't come into your possession. The Yerusha, which automatically is in your possession, you can't deny it. You'll have to somehow release it from your possession. And that's why Rebbe says, the fact that it is classified as a matana is what allows you to say, I won't take it. I don't want that possession of the Bechorah. All right. Amara Papa. Rebbe comes here to narrow the scope of the machlokas between Rebbe and the Chachamim. It says, Dikla va'alim. You have a palm tree, right, that was small, and then it got bigger. Ara va'sik sirton. You have a land, and then some sort of flood or natural event came and brought all this good dirt or dung or somehow made the field better, but they did nothing. Over there, kuli amalo plige de shakil. Everyone agrees in that place that the Bechor gets two. That means even the Chachamim will agree that he gets that in the Chalek Bechorah. Why? Because nothing's changed. The item itself is still the same item. You had a dekel, and now you have a dekel. It's just bigger than it was before, but it's the same dekel. The land was the land before. It's just a nicer land now. The question is, ki plige, bichafura vahava shuvli. In a case where it's shachat, it's say, young sprouts, or hay that's coming out of the ground, and then it grows, it matures to the point where it's tvua, point where it's really grain or it's harvestable. That's one possibility. Or shlufafe, vave tamre, or the other case, the same thing by fruits, where they are either buds or unripened fruits, and then they grow to maturity where they're ripe and they're tamarim, they're called tamarim now. So that's the question. Mar savar shivcha melum, or mar savar ishtane. The question about how you view these items now, is this simply the same young fruit that's just come, you know, it's come in a new manifestation, but still a tamar. A dekel produces dates, and originally it was a small form of the date, or it was a flower, and now it's a full date. So it's a date. It was a date, and now it's a date. Right? Or the same thing with the tevah. Before it was a small grain, and now it's big grain. Or do we say that the name has changed? Because it's made such a significant change, you do no longer call it the same name. Before it was shachat, now it's tevuah. Before it was shlufafei, now it's a tamar. So the fact that the name, or the way people describe such an item, changes the name, it's so significant that it's a new item. If it's so significant that it's a new item, then the bechor, that's called ra'oi, and not mukzak. So Rav Papa basically narrows the machlokis to shevach mameila that is significant. I mean, it has to be shevach mameila that's so significant that you would actually somehow describe it differently or view it differently because it's so different than the original item, that's when you don't get it. But Chachamim agree, when it's just a change to the, I don't know, the qualitative structure or chefetz that the Bechor is entitled to, which is small, now big, right? Or, I mean, sorry, more of a quantitative. And then by the field that's qualitative, that it's just a better field than it was before, you haven't changed it. You have a field and you have a date tree. Those are the same items as they were before. There the Chachamim would agree that the Bechor gets a portion of that increase.
Well, okay. It's also the first case when a tree grows and it develops. We can also consider it.
Right, so that's possible. Maybe there might be here that the Gemara used the example of a dekel, which we've seen before. Dekel has significance, and therefore it's always a dekel. Might be, right, if something's a sapling and then goes into a full tree, if it changes its name, it's so significant, the change, that maybe the Chachamim would agree in that case that it's ishtane, and you can't classify it as the same tree it was before. Right, so Amar Rabba Barbachano, Amar Rabchia, second to Rabbi, Right, so it's, if it doesn't matter. If you go like Chamim, like you go like the rabbi, passing like either one of them, you're okay. So the Gemara is like, wait a minute, what, this is, seems very strange. How could you have it that rabbi and the Chamim are right here? So Misfekele, he has a Safek over here. Well, listen to what a Safek is. When we pass him like a Loch like Rebbe, do we say the Loch is always like Rebbe when he's arguing only on an individual? But now when he argues on a Rabim. Or is the halacha like Rebbe against individuals and against the Rabbim? Rebbe has such strength, power, and right, granted to him when it comes to Psak halacha, that he's even able to overcome the Rabbim. So that's his safek here. Is the safek is the halacha like Rabbi? Because Rabbi, halacha like Rabbi no matter what. Or is the halacha like the Chamim? Because it's Rabbim v'yachid. And we don't say the principle of Rebbe mechaveiro when there's a Rabbim here. So he has his suffix. So he says it's not classified as a toeh b'dvar mishnah. It's not classified as a toeh b'dvar mishnah because we don't know what the mishnah is here. We don't know what the outcome is. So it's not a toeh b'dvar mishnah. We can't force someone to retract their psak halacha because we basically don't have a psak halacha over here. The Tosfos asks the basic question, which is that we know throughout Chas that the Gemara is pretty clear. That's halacha mirebi mechaveiro v'lo mechaveirav. It's not something that the Gemara has a suffix anywhere else. Why is the Gemara also going to have a suffix here? And we know that it's halacha mirebi mechaveiro. So the Tosfos claims over here that the Rabbeinu Tam says this is just in this case. This is not a question in Chas. Is halacha mirebi mechaveiro? But uniquely in this case, is that the truth? Is that true? In this case, is it true that the halacha is like Rabbi Michaveirav or just Michaveiro? But not that we're making a general principle about this concept of halacha kirabi. So that's the way he tries to. Oh my God, there are problems with that. But you know, that's probably the best explanation of why the Gemara is even entertaining it here. Unless you say this is the source for the Gemara that everyone else in Shas. Right, that they say halacha Rebbe Michaveiro is because of the Gemara here. Although it's not clear because the conclusion of the Gemara here seems in favor of Rabbi and not the Chachamim. So, right, it doesn't really set the principle that you want to set. Right now, Amarav Nachman Amarav, Asur Lasot Kedivei Rabbi. Nachman says, like Rav, that it's not, you're not allowed to paskin like Rabbi, Kasavar, he believes, halacha Karebi Michaveiro Velo Michaveiro. He says pretty straightforward. Right, that like we say everywhere else in Chas, the halacha is like Rebbe Michaveiro, but not against the Rabbim. So over here, the Chachamim would be Koveya. It's Rabbi Nachman Didei Amar, Mutar Lasod Kedivrei Rabbi. So he says, you're allowed to do like Rabbi. Kosika Savar, halacha Karabi Michaveiro, Vafilo Michaveiro. He must hold that way. So meaning that you have three opinions here. One opinion is a Safek, right, which is the original question, which is Amar Rabbi Abchana, right, that you have a Safek. Then you have Rav, who says it's no safek, the halacha is not like Rabbi. Then you have Rav Nachman, who says that there is no safek here, but the halacha is like Rabbi. Right? So you have those three opinions.
And why would he say Mundur Lassos?
Ah, very good. So that's a question of what, why does he say?
It's like the same as Rav Papa.
Right. So the Tosfos asks this on the position of Rabbeinu Tam, about that we mentioned before, that Rabbeinu Tam says that it's just in this case and not in a general principle. So he says, Avakta kasha, kashe, Takam Rav Nachman, Mutar Lassos Kedivrei Rabbi. Given the svirle hocha, shalocha kerabi michaveirav, amai kamar mutar. Chayav lasot havalei the meimar. Should have said, you must do like Rabbi. But do the kamar kasavarav matamit mar. Okay, that's the next line in the Gemara. So the Tosfos says that the whole discussion here in the Gemara about halacha rabbi michaveirav seems different than anywhere else in Shas. Because why would you say mutar and not chayav? If you believe the principle that halacha is kerabi mechavei rav, then like you're suggesting to me, Rav Nachman should say, you have to do like Rebbe. It's not, what do you mean mutar? Mutar sounds like, okay, if you do it, it's okay. It doesn't sound, it almost sounds like it's a bidyevet situation. Or if you want to, you do it, but that's not, you're not obligated to. If the halacha is like Rebbe, mechavei rav, then there's nothing to talk about. The halacha is like Rebbe. So that's one of the questions to me, which you were addressing, is that this doesn't seem to be a real psak. Because you're talking about mutar rather than chayav. Alright, Amarava, and now it sounds like there was in a girso of the Rashbam, Hilchasa, Asur Lasod Kedivrei Rabbi. Vimasa Asui. That it's Asur, the halacha is that it's Asur to do like Rabbi, but if you did it, b'diavad, then it's okay. Kasavar, matimitmar. So he says that we hold a matin, which is a principle that we've seen before. Matin means that we favor a certain tana in the halacha, which is that if you come to the Beis Medrash and you ask who the halacha is like, we're going to tell you the halacha is like Rabbi, like the Chachamim, sorry. But If you do, like the other party, we'll accept it. It's not that it's no. It's not like in a machlokas tanaim when we pass like one tana, the other tana becomes oistana. I mean, that it's not an opinion anymore, and it's not a valid opinion. No, here both opinions are valid, but we're going to tell you the psak halach is like the chachamim. But if you do like Rabbi, we're not going to reverse that. We're not going to take that away. So again, here, Tosus points out here again that the matin over here is different than anywhere else. Generally, matin is the party that we're favoring. Matin means that we hold like the chachamim. But over here, it's suggesting that the matin is going on Rabbi. Because it says that who wants to do like Rabbi, imaseh asui. And therefore, kasavar matin itmar. That we go like Rabbi. That's what the Rishbam explains over here. That we go like Rabbi. Exactly. Tosus points out that inconsistency where the chas. Says near the reed, Dachi mespekele yaloch karebi mechavirov lo mechavar shepasku kach behedja.
The Rish seems to be suggesting something that's found in the other Rishonim, like the Ramban and the Ritva. The Ramban says over here, when we say, according to Rav Nachman, that halocha kedivrei Rabbi Michaveiro, and then afilu Michaveirav, it's not an explicit statement, right? That the only thing we know from the Gemara is that halocha kerabi Michaveiro. When it comes to halocha kerabi Michaveirav, there either we have a safek or we're uncertain. There are places where it is like him, and there are places where it's not like him. And therefore, Rav Nachman says mutar. Rav Nachman says mutar because we're not certain about what the position when it comes to halacha Rabbi Michaveirav. That's where we have our uncertainty. Michaveiro, that we're certain is true. Michaveirav, we have some sort of uncertainty, and therefore that's what we are trying to deal with here. The Ritva himself disagrees and says no. The reason Rav Nachman says mutar is because Rav said asur. So he's just reflecting the Lashon of Rav who said Asur, he's saying Mutar. But really, Rav Nachman believes it's a Chovah, that you must paskin like Rabbi. The Ritva then goes and explains by Matin, that he explains similar to the way we just explained over here, which is that Matin means that when it comes to Halacha Karebi Michaveiro, that's a given. Now when it comes to Rebbe Michaveirav, the Halacha there is Matin Kechaveirav, that we lean towards his Chaveirav. So if we lean towards his Chaveirav, that means that we pass on like the Rabbanon, but the Chatchila, but B'dievet, if you do like Rabbi, then that's okay. Which would also be probably the Ramban and the Ri are suggesting over here, that Halacha Mechaviro is a given. Halacha Merbi Mechavirav is the question over here. According to the Ramban, it's a question, even according to Rav Nachman, according to Ritva, that's not a question there. But in the case of the position of Rav, when it comes to Rav Matin, Matin means not that we're Matin like Rabbi, the way the Rashbam explains, but Matin means Matin like Chavirav, the way Patsin like the Rabbanan. And if you pass like Rabbi, then we say B'dievet, that's okay in this instance.
Tanya, Tani, Rav Nachman Bashar Sifrei Debei Rav. So Rav Nachman brought a brisa from Shar Sifrei Debei Rav. The Sifra in general, the Sifra is the Midrash Halacha for Vayikra, what we know as Torat Kohanim. That's the Midrash Halacha of. The Shar Sifrei Debei Rav means other Sifrei that go on the other Mesechtot. Well, the other Chumashim. The other Chumashim also have a Midrash Halacha. The Midrash Halacha on Shmot is the Mechilta. The Midrash Halacha on the Bamidbar and the Varim is called the Sifrei. So when you say the Shar Sifrei Debei Rav, the major work or Midrash Halacha is on Sefer on Vayikra, actually. It's on the one of Vayikra, which is the Sifra Debei Rav, Hainu Torat Kohanim. The Sifra Debei Rav, what's called the Sifra Debei Rav, is Torat Kohanim. That's the major halachic work on Chumash. So when you say the other works, it means anything besides the one of Vayikra. So it could be the Mechilta and Shemot, or it could be the Sifrei of Bamidbar and Devarim. Now clearly, the Parsha Bechor is found in Devarim. So we're talking about the Sifrei over here, which is that on Devarim. So he says, in that work, right, of the Midrash Halacha on Devarim, he had a brisa which says, B'chol asher yimatzei lo, prat, l'shevach, shishbichu yoshim l'achad mitat aviyem. It comes to exclude the increase in value in the estate that is done or contributed by the yitomim, the investment yitomim. Aval shevach sheshibchu nechasim lachar mitat aviyem, that which happens memela naturally, or that increases without any investment by the yitomim. Shakil, they do take it. Umani, who would be the author of this brisa that's found in the Sifrei? That is Rabbi. Now tznei Rami Bar Chama b'shar Sifrei Debei Rav. Now you have Rami Bar Chama who's quoting the Midrash Halacha and Dvarim. Again, which is the Sifrei, not Torat Kohanim, which is the major work. That's the Sifrei Debei Rav. B'chol asher yimatzei lo, everything that is found by him, prat l'shevach sheshibchu nechasim l'char mitat aviyem. That is, to exclude any value increase in the property after the death of their father. And certainly, that which the Yitomim increase does not belong to the Eitlo Shakil. So here, both Shevach Mamela and Shevach that's invested by the Yitomim, he does not get. Umani, of course, who's the author of this position, is the Rabbanan. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Now we have a statement, Rav Yehuda Shmuel. Ein b'chor notel pishnayim b'milve. So now we're getting to a case here, it was a machlokas here, about how do we treat a loan? And what type of loan are we talking about here? So the man, who's this according to? Ilim et Rabbanon. If you're talking about the Rabbanan, then Shmuel's coming along and say, they don't get a, he doesn't get a part of the loan, the b'chor. Shevach, that happens. Mamela, the b'chor doesn't get. Now you're going to talk about a shtar that's not even his possession yet. He has the shtar. According to the Rishbam, it means that he has the piece of paper and he doesn't have anything else. The shtar just entitles him to go collect, but the item's not his possession. So why should the b'chor get anything according to Chachamim? So Amri Rabbanan lo shakyo milve. I'm sorry. Amri Rabbanan lo shakyo milve mibai. The Rabbanan there say you don't take it. Milve mibai. I need to know about a loan. Of course they don't do it. Elo the Rabbi. It must be that he's talking in Rabbi's position. Rabbi agrees that you don't get the milve. So velo hadatanya. What are you going to do with this brisa? We have a brisa that says Yeshu shtar chov b'chor notel pishnayim ben b'milve ben b'ribit. They inherit a shtar chov. And the b'chor is entitled to get double portion, both in the loan and in the ribit, and in the interest. So over here, it must be that the Rosh Bam says this is a loan to a non-Jew, where it's permissible to take the interest from it. And therefore, the Tomim can collect from this shtar, and they get the chov, and they get the interest back. This Bryce says that the b'chor gets a double portion in the loan, in the principal, and in the interest. Who's the author of this? Mani. Who's the author? It's Lo Rabbi, Lo Rabbanan. It'll be neither of them, because you just said that Shmuel speaking in the name of Rabbi, that a milveh does the b'chor doesn't get a double portion. So who's the author of this b'risa? We have no author anymore of this b'risa. So it must be, right now, that who's the author of the b'risa? Olam, the author of the b'risa is Rabbi, and that means Shmuel's statement is for the Rabbanan. The Olam the Rabbanan, v'itzrich. So why do I need for the Rabbanan? Does the Rabbanan deny you getting anything, any value from the estate after the death of the father does not go to the b'chor? What are you going to tell me about a milva? Sagadat chamina, milva can even denokit shtara, command the gav yudami. A loan, since you are holding the shtar, it's the equivalent of being collected already. Since it's the equivalent of collected already, it's as if it's muhzak. So that's what Chamin come say, no, we don't think that way. Kamash malon, that the Chamin say, no. So Rabbi believes it is kegavi adamya. It is kegavi. It's as if it's collected. Now, why is it as if collected? It could be for two reasons, which is two reasons that the Rishbam brings at least over here. Is what does it mean that it's command the gavi adami? It's command the gavi adami is because one, it's in the hand of the Yitomim. Why do you hold a shtar? It's in place of the money that's being exchanged, and he says it's like a mashkon. Right, it's like a mashkon, and a mashkon, everybody agrees that the b'chor will get pishnayim in the mashkon, because mashkon is as if it's been paid already. Right, so a mashkon, the b'chor will get a double portion it, because the mashkon has value. So the Rishbam claims that that's the same thing over here, that the shtar acts or functions like the mashkon, and since it's like functioning like the mashkon, therefore it's if collected, or you can claim, which we have in other places, ko shtar, I'll make the gvot, kagavui dami. That's another principle, that any shtar that's collectible on is as if it's been collected. Right? That's a principle. So either one of those principles can allow the b'chor to get a double portion, either because it's already like a mashkon, it's as if it's collected already, because it's a mashkon, or from that general principle, forgetting about mashkon, but the general principle that any shtar that's open to be collected is as if kegavui dami.
Maybe so that's it.
It has value, right? That can be sold. It has inherent value, which would be like a mashkon, right? I think that what you're saying would be similar to a mashkon. So that's be the position of the of Rabbi. That's why you can collect a double portion there. The Chachamim deny that and say no, that's not. You have a piece of paper. That's all you have. A piece of paper entitles you to rights, but it doesn't give you it as if it's collected. Shalchu mitam. We have another brisa. B'chor notel pishtayim b'milve alo b'ribit. A b'chor gets a double portion in the loan in the principal, but not in the interest. Laman. Who's this according to? If you say, we're talking about Shevach in his own possession, meaning that the estate naturally went up in value. Right there, Milva Miboy. Same question. The Rabbanan already, we know, don't allow anything. So why would a Milva be included? Elo the Rabbi. Must be according to Rabbi. Does Rabbi really say that you don't get rebate as well. You don't get the bechor doesn't get a double portion in the interest. Batanya, we have a brisa. Rebbe Omer bechor notel pishtayim ben b'milva ben b'ribit. That he gets a double portion, whether it's the principal or the interest. So when it says la'olam rabbanon he umilva command the gavya dami. Right, this is the Rabbanon, but the Rabbanon believe that a milva is as if collected. So now what do we have? We have a machlokas in the position of the Rabbanon. We have Shmuel, right, which is a Yudom and Shmuel, and we have the Shalchumitam, we have a Braisa. And they're arguing about the position of the Rabbanon now. Rebbe agrees in all cases, according to these two, both of these Braitot, Rebbe agrees that you get, the Bechor collects both the principal and the interest, he gets entitled to everything.
No.
There's a machlokas here, only according to the Rabbanan. According to the Rabbanan, according to Rabbi Yudam and Shmuel, you get neither the principal nor the interest. You're entitled to neither. The Bechor is entitled to neither, according to Rabbanan. But according to the Braisa, according to the Rabbanan agree that you get the principal, but you don't get the interest.
The Shalchumitam,
which is a Braisa, or the Shalchumitam, whatever it is that they're sending from over there, right, that opinion argues on Rabbi Yudam and Shmuel. It says that you Chamim even agree that you get the milveh. You just don't get the interest. You have to differentiate between the principal and the interest. Why would you differentiate? What is the reason to differentiate? So he says, the Rashbam explains this, the difference here is because if you look in the Rashbam, it's the last Rashbam on the narrow lines of Lo Beribit. Afa pisha katu b'shtar. Even though it's written, the Ribit, the interest is written in the shtar. Umilva command the gavya dami. And now we're saying that a loan is considered as if collected, even according to the Chachamim. Hove nakit shtara. Afa ribit. Afa gav de nakit shtar. V'kvar avar zman. Right, and the time's already passed where the loan is due. Mishemet aviv. Lo. De'en lecha ra'ui kazeh. Right, there's no item that is more ra'ui than this, than mokzak. Why? Davar shloya yashalo me'olam. Because it's something that never belonged to you. Ava ma'ot, milved, the kashaka ma'ot hilvo. When it comes to the principal of the loan, you had money, you gave the money, and then in exchange for the money, you got a shtar back.
Even interest that already accrued was never really actual.
Right. The interest is always something that was added after the death of the father. Any interest, right, is something that was earned afterwards, or something that is not connected to the original loan in the sense that the shtar covers it.
It's not saying that it was earned afterwards. It's either the ribis that accrued before the father died, let's say, and that's what the shalom kind of said, right? That even there's even ribis that accrued before he died.
Right. It's not necessarily associated with the shtar, which is what the Shabbat is calling.
It's not.
It's something that is.
It's the part that was never
guaranteed. Right? I mean, that the shtar guarantees you something, that's the principle, because that's the mashkon for the principle. You can't have a mashkon on something that never existed. I mean, that if you lend money, then you can have a mashkon in exchange for that, and it can be as if collected. But if you have an interest in something up and above, right, the item, the shtar does not act as a mashkon for that. It just tells you that you owe the interest, but it's not as a mashkon for that. So that's why the chamim,
because our banks today, every day your interest gets accrued to your account.
Right.
But apparently in a loan like this, it's not the case.
No, that's in the end. I would say that they're right. They didn't accrue it on a daily basis. They said at the end, when it came due, when they come to collect it, that's when the interest comes due. So, right, if the father already collected the interest, then there'd be nothing to talk about, right? I mean, if it did accrue on a daily basis and it was considered as if collected by the time the father dies, then right, then it's already part of the estate and the bechor would get it. But that's not the way it's viewed here. The view is that when the interest is collected, that's when it became, right, actualized. So that's the position here. Now, first of all, the Rashbam says that there were those that tried to reconcile between the Shalchumitam and Shmuel, Amar Yudah Shmuel, and say that they were talking about different loans. One loan is talking about a loan to a Jew, and one's talking about a loan to a non-Jew. So that's what he was suggesting. That's the difference here in the whole opinion. The Rashbam disagrees, and he says, how could you say that? He says, how could you claim that when a loan goes to a non-Jew, that you're more likely to collect the core than you are with the Jew? I'll read you the line of the Rashbam. It's an unbelievable line. He says, this can't be. Da'abra adarabah. He says that when you're talking about Yehuda Mishmol, that's a milveh to Israel. That's to a Jew. And that's why you get nothing. Whereas when it's a milveh to a guy, then you get the core, you get the principle. He says, da'adarabah ipcho mistabra. He says the opposite makes sense. The milveh she Yisrael v'imuchzak tvei. Mimilveh she ovdei kachamim. That the collection of a clone from a Jew is much more likely than from non-Jew. Asher pihem diver shav. All right. The Rishbam is quoting, and he says that where is the more likelihood, and I don't know what the situation was, is it in time, and what is it, you know, interaction was, but he says that he feels that, especially in those days where, right, the status of the Jews in society was somewhat suspect, right, in that case, for an outside party within the Jewish community, for someone to deny the loan, that would be unlikely. But outside the Jewish community, where the Jews were treated in such a manner, it's very possible the guy would walk and say, too bad, and there would be no way for him to get the money back. So if that's the case, he says, you can't make such a differentiation. It's almost the opposite way around. So he denies that, and he says the difference here is about what's considered as collected or not collected over here. Right now, the Gemara continues, and we'll just read this, and then we're going to have to come back and do it again tomorrow. Amalei Ravacha bar Rav, the Ravina, Ikla Ameimar the Atrein, Ameimar came to our city, Bedorish, and he was Dorish, Bechor Notel Pishtaim Bemilbe, Velo Beribit. He takes double portion, the Bechor is a double portion in the loan, but not in the Ribit. That's like the Chachamim of the Shalchumitam. It's like the Rabbanan of the Shalchumitam. So Amalei, Nardai, Litamayu. This is, the Nardai are consistent in their opinion. Who's a Nardai? Ameimar and Rav Nachman. Because why? The Amar Rabba, Gavu Karka Yishlo. Gavu Mamot Einlo. Rav Nachman Amar, Gavu Mamot Yishlo. Gavu Karka Einlo. So now, what does this mean? Now the Rav Nachman and Rabba are just arguing over here how the loan was collected. How is this loan collected? Now according to Rav Nachman and Rabba, it makes a difference how the loan is collected. But the Gemara, according to this, it's not that a Meimar disagrees with a Rabba or Rav Nachman, because he thinks both. A Meimar seems to be stating that it's irrespective of how the loan's collected, you would get the money, or the Bechor would get Pishtayim. That's not true here. Rabba and Rav Nachman are arguing about which one is Yoter Mochzak. And the Machlokas here basically comes down to, which is that Rav Nachman says, this is according to Rishbam, Nachman says that if the money is collected, that was the original loan. The original loan was money. So if you get back money, that's considered a return of the original loan. That's considered if you were Mochzak in it originally, because the transaction was a lending of money out, and money came back. But if you're paid with karka, we paid with land, that was not the original intention of the loan. The original intention of the loan was not to buy the karka, it was not to give money, and then if the guy defaults on the loan, then you get karka. So that's a new item that's coming in. So according to Rav Nachman, you don't get pishnayim when it's karka, you only get pishnayim when it's ma'ot, which is the return of the original principal, the way it was given. Rabba, on the other hand, says the opposite. He says, listen, ma'ot by a loan are lehotzanitna. When a person gives money, the money's gone. There's nothing left. When the person pays you back money, it's new money. It's a totally new transaction. The original transaction's gone. That's not true by karka. The karka, the land, was mishubad. The lien on the karka existed from the moment the money was lent. As soon as the money's lent, you have a lien on that property. So when the property's collected in the end, you already owned it. A balcho, a creditor, right, who has a lien on a property, it's as if he has some sort of ownership in that property from that day. And therefore, when he collects in the end from the karka, they get paid in the karka. That, the Bechor gets pishnayim, because that was as if it was collected already in their father's time. So that's the way the Rishbam learns it. He says, a Meimar lines up with both opinions here, but basically the point is, or the point of this whole, is that a Meimar and Rabba and Rav Nachman all agree that a milvez is collected and a ribit is not collected. And so the support for a Meimar's position that the milvez is collected comes both from Rabba and Rav Nachman, who both have a case where they do say that the collection of the Bechor gets pishnayim. Now the reason they said Nardai is because that was just happens to be that a Meimar and Rav Nachman are both Nardai and they're agreeing over here. But that Rabba doesn't agree, or they doesn't agree to Rabba's position. That's the way the Rishbam learns it. The Tosus, on the other hand, says here, it's the last couple lines in the Tosus, Elanira, time of the Rav Nachman, Damar Gavu Ma'ot, Yeshlo, Meshum de Derech Bachov, Lifroa, Bechovam Ma'ot, Velo Karka. Vami Muchsak Kubao Ma'ot, Meshum de Smiche Alayu. The Rav Nachman is not that the loan that you give out originally when you pay money, that's what you get back, but rather, the creditor, when he lends money, he expects to get money back. And therefore, he's Sumech, his dot, on the monies of the debtor. Since you don't really pay back with land usually, they don't rely on it. It's an interesting, it's a takeoff on the Rishbam over here. The Rishbam says, oh, you pay with money, you get money back. So therefore, it's the same transaction. Hey, Tosus is not willing to say that. He says, monies are gone, and it's not. So he says that it's a mentality about when a person lends money. A person lends money, he expects to get money back, and therefore he relies on money all the way along. That he relies on the cash of the debtor all the way along. Whereas by karka is a default if he defaults on the loan. Meaning that that's the vehicle for repayment when there's a default on loan. But that's not what he's relying on. He's not relying on the karka. He's relying on the money to get the money back. Although again, it's a strange concept because in general, throughout Shas, we've said that the creditor always relies on the land because he knows it won't disappear. He doesn't rely on metaltalin because they do disappear. But it seems to be here that there's some sort of difference in cash, which is monies, that you do rely on those monies rather than metaltalin, which might disappear. But cash, we assume that he has always this liquid cash, and that you rely on to get your payment back rather than the karka, and therefore it's considered as if it's mukhzak. But not karka, which is something is, if he defaults on the loan, then you'll get the karka. That's the way Rav Nachman learns it. But either way, now we have a position that supports a meimar, which is the position of the chachamim, is that you get in the milveh, but you don't get in the rebit against Amar Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, who said that you get nothing, according to the chachamim, both in the milveh and the rebit. All right, we'll stop here.